Andrew Hatla from A Difference, and tonight's show, I'm being interviewed by Robin McBride, a master's candidate from Rochester, New York. This interview actually happened about 2 weeks ago, and we had an opportunity to discuss all sorts of things: safety on the internet, the role that blogs and blogging play in the classroom, and the impact that it has on teaching and learning. It was a real enjoyable conversation, and we touched on all sorts of issues. A little less than an hour long, so without any further ado, here we go, right into the interview, just at the start of the recording. We're recording.
All right, fabulous. Well, I just want to thank you again for agreeing to do this with me. I really appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure.
I've got a bunch of questions here about blogs, so I'll just get started here. First, can you describe for me some of your blogging practices? Like, when and how did you get started?
Well, I started in January of this year. I was preparing for a technology workshop that I was giving and stumbled across blogs and bloggers in education and started reading some bloggers and thought I wanted to try it out with one of my classes. So it was the end of the semester in January, so I did kind of start it, but it was only about a week before the exams and the course ended. And the beginning of the next semester, I created a blog, Pre-Cal 40S. And you can look at it online, actually, as we're talking, if you wanted to poke around. That was the first blog that I had.
Fabulous. So why did you decide to try blogging with your students?
Because I thought it would be a really good way to get, well, to accomplish a lot of goals, not the least of which was to encourage greater class participation, to hear some of the silent voices in the classroom. There's a lot of kids that just never speak up. They're shy, they're embarrassed, whatever it is, or they're afraid to ask questions in class because they're afraid they'll look stupid. But on the blog, there is a little room there for them to be anonymous, and they can ask their question when no one else is looking. So even though it's not really different, it feels a little different to them, and they're a little more comfortable with it. I also wanted to encourage students to think about the stuff that they're learning. I teach in a semestered system. It goes by really fast, and we cover so much ground in such a short period of time that I'm always concerned that students just don't have enough absorption time. By using the blog to reflect on what they're learning and to extend the class beyond the 1 hour and a bit that we get each day, I was hoping that students would start to reflect on their learning and give them that opportunity for absorption that they might not have.
Great. Do you find that a lot of kids ask questions on the blog?
Yeah, this year more so than ever before. What I'm really encouraging more and more is that they should talk to each other and not just me. And that's really started to happen. I've got chat boxes on my newest blogs. You can go look at any of those, the AP Calculus or the Pre-Cal 20 or Pre-Cal 30. And if you scroll down on the right-hand side, you'll see a white chat box, and you'll actually see the conversations they're having tonight.
Awesome. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
So I noticed that on a lot of your blogs, you have the Scribe as your main system.
Right.
Is that the only way that you usually use the blog, or what else do you do with your kids in the blog?
Well, I'm going to point you to my blog, and I'm going to IM the address over to you. Okay, so if you click on that link, that'll take you to my blog, my personal blog. And in the table, you can see how it was last semester and how it is this semester.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there's lots of changes. So when I started, I used the blog, well, like it says, for reviews and animations and quizzes for the kids to check their understanding. I like those animations because it helped to clarify points and provide demonstrations that I wasn't always able to do in class. Mm-hmm. And I occasionally would post opportunities for them to get marks in different ways using images from Flickr. And the muddiest point was in a workshop that Karen Cameron came to our school, and she did. And she shared a lot of really great ideas, but I was really taken with that one. And I did it once on the blog, and now I've done it a few times, and it's been really fantastic. But you can see a lot of the, it's really exploded now. And it's exploded mostly because the kids push me. The chat boxes came about because, I wonder, yeah. The chat boxes came about in this blog that you're looking at now in a difference. If you actually work your way through the archives, you'll see the whole journey there. Like, as things happen to me, I share what's happening in my classes and my thinking here on this blog. So the kids were I got like 60 email one night, because every time someone leaves a comment on the blog, I get an email notification. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the email was like, ha ha ha, LOL, and all this. So they were using it like a chat room. So as the kids were doing it, one of the kids made a comment, oh, we need a shout box. I didn't know what that was. So I quickly did a Google search, found a site called ShoutMix, and quickly grabbed that ShoutMix, grabbed the code, put it on my blog, and boom, the kids were now chatting. As in the middle of their chat, they suddenly saw this box appear, and then they started talking. This was the grade 10s. And so I felt really good about that, you know, really responsive to the kids' needs.
Yeah, that's awesome.
About a week later, the kids in the other classes said, how come we don't have one of these? So I wrote to the guy at ShoutMix, and I said, is there a chance I can get more than one? So he said, sure, I'll give you 5. I asked for 4. He gave me 5. And I told him what I was using it for. Now all my blogs have chat boxes. When the class goes dormant, though, those chat boxes will move. They won't stay on online permanently.
Great.
But the blog will.
I'm definitely gonna look at this website. I never found your own personal blog before today.
Yeah, I don't. You wouldn't find it in my profile. Why do I do that?
I'm sorry.
No, just kind of reflecting now as we're talking.
Yeah. So what do you think the benefits you've experienced for blogging are? You know, why are you happy that you've done it?
Oh, the benefits are legion. Where to begin? I've got much more class participation. Kids buy into the class, and I'm able to build a rapport and create a group from a bunch of individuals much more quickly than ever I have been in the past. My first blog, the Pre-Cal 40S blog, by day 3, the kids were interacting with me and talking and asking questions and really, really engaging me because of a post I had written on the blog about asking questions, that's what I would really, really like them to do. Typically, that can take weeks before kids reach that comfort level. But the kids respond instantaneously to the stuff I post on the blog. Kids are reflecting about their work. You know what? I mean, I could tell you what I think, but maybe it's better if you saw what the kids think.
Oh, yeah.
In the previous posts, you'll see something called Ole My Tango.
Yep.
Click on that. And this is a workshop that I gave. I'm reflecting on a workshop that I gave. But down there you'll see the OLE is an acronym for Orchestrating a Learning Ecology.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's a workshop that I gave where I used the blog as a presentation tool when I was teaching other teachers on how to orchestrate a learning ecology using blogs. And I used the tango as a metaphor for that. And then I did another workshop called Rip Mix Learn. You see the link there. And that's about the technological literacies you need in order to do this. But if you look at the second to last paragraph, there's a in white, what if your blog was gone?
Mm-hmm.
Click on that. And that'll take you to the last post on Ole. So there was a teacher in Ontario, an elementary teacher, Conrad Glogowski, who actually won Blogger of the Year this year.
Oh.
Yeah, he's the EduBlogger of the Year, Conrad. He got 2 awards in the blog awards. But anyways, he reported in his class that the blog went offline and they lost a lot of their posts. And instead of really talking about any of the technological challenges that they faced, he was more interested in what the kids' reactions were. One of his kids said that when they couldn't write on the blog anymore and they had to write stuff on paper, The kid said it felt like no one was listening. It's just if you follow the link Tools Interiorized, that's the post where he talks about this. Anyways, that really moved me. So I asked my kids those two questions. Is our classroom blog valuable to you? If yes, how? And how would you feel if our blog suddenly went offline and couldn't be recovered? And the kids answered the questions. And these are kids from all three of my classes. So you get grade 10s, 11s, and 12s. And you've got it there in their own words. One of the kids said that if the blog went offline, they would cry.
Wow. That's so powerful.
Yeah, like the stuff the kids wrote here is just unbelievable. One of the kids pops in to visit to leave his comment and says, wow, the comments here are really long, and then leaves probably one of the longest comments. And there's a wealth of stuff there. Like, I mean, the kids speak for themselves.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to have to take a second and read that.
Sure.
I'm just scrolling here and there's so many.
Yeah, I think there's 18 or 19 of them.
All right, I will have my reading cut out for me. I will take a look at that later.
Okay.
How about limitations? Is there anything you wish you could do that you can't do?
On the blog?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or, you know.
Limitations.
Yeah.
I haven't hit any limitations yet. I'm still at the point where I don't think I've explored the limits of what this technology allows or what it fosters. I think we're just beginning to scratch the surface with this stuff. What's really interesting is, you know, you can come look at my blogs and read the stuff that my students write, but what's interesting to me is what other teachers do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where the tango metaphor came in. Like, the tango only has three steps, forward, backwards, and side. Well, I only use about four or five different tools, right? Blogs, RSS, some social bookmarking, chat boxes. And that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way I mix and match those things is my tango. That's the way I dance. But another teacher will mix those tools in a totally different way. There's another teacher in my class, in my school right now. Her blog that she uses with her students is called s1math.blogspot.com. And this is her grade 9 class. Well, she's doing this with grade 9s.
What type of teacher is she?
She's awesome. She's awesome. I want her to teach my kids. She's very energetic and very... She's just a wonderful teacher. She always has an interesting activity for the kids to do, and she's not afraid to take a risk. She jumped into this with both feet. She's got another blog that she's using now with her grade 10 consumer math students, and a lot of times those are considered low-functioning students, and she's just begun with those kids. It'll be interesting to see what she does with them. People look at my work and say, well, you're teaching pre-calculus. You've got, you know, the cream of the cream. And I say, well, it doesn't really matter what you teach. I mean, here you're looking at a grade 9 blog. Grade 10 lower functioning kids can do this. Anyone can.
Well, so I guess I want to talk a couple of logistics just to get down what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So do you hold students accountable for their participation on the blog? Like, is it mandatory that they participate?
Yeah, the blog is used as part of their assessment. On every test, every unit test that they write, they have to write before the unit test, any time before the unit test, which for most of them means the night before. but sometime before the test, they have to write one reflective post. I'm going to take you back, blogging on blogging.
Mm-hmm.
Click on that. And so this is from the Pre-Cal 40S blog, and I began by doing a little reflection on the class. This was like my third class with this group. So you see, like, I'm talking about how it was a great class because kids were actually taking risks and asking questions, and that was great. It was the first time that I'd ever worked with a class in blogs, and I said, you're going to have to do one post before each test that's going to count for one mark on your test. And the question on the test is going to read, have you blogged, as outlined in my post, Blogging on Blogging, at least once since the last test?
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no? And they just circle the answer. And it's easy for me to check because it's here or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's those six bulleted items. And I said, that's the kind of thing that you have to write. You can write about one of those things or all six of them or something like that. If none of that works for you, then occasionally I'll put up a blogging prompt, which is what you see beneath that.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll always be in this format. It'll be bold and big and underlined. And then the prompt is always going to be in a box. You see it there in the green box.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have to reflect and make some kind of think about what they've been learning. And then I pointed them to a web tool that they could use that helps them do that online as well, if they wanted to. So, that's worth one mark on their test. They work awfully hard for that one mark.
Well, it sounds like they really, enjoy it and that they use it as a tool to help them learn.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of kids, if you surveyed the staff in your school and asked them how many of them have a blog, a bunch of them might not even know what that word means.
I would agree.
And some of them, there probably wouldn't be an awful lot of people that have blogs. I mean, if I said 5%, that would probably be an overestimate. Now, if you did the same thing with the kids in your classes, there's probably a lot of them that have what they call a blog or an online journal.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids are doing this. They're doing it anyways. They're doing it out of school, unsupervised. They're doing some really stupid things because no one's giving them an example. No one's giving them a model about, when you write something on the internet, that goes out there forever.
Yeah.
And anybody can read that. And if you put your name on it, and 10 years down the road, you get Googled as an employer is looking you up as a possible employee, and they see something stupid you've written, they may ignore the date. And kids don't think about stuff like that, and they need to be told about that. Sorry, I got on a bit of a soapbox there.
No, understandable.
Anyways, so they have this blogging thing that they do. That counts for marks. There was one other thing I was going to tell you about this. I don't remember how I got into this with you. Oh, yeah. How do the kids like it? The kids love it. This is their grammar. This is how the kids talk to each other. This is how they relate to each other. This is how they build their communities. So what I do in my classroom is I try to build a community. Each class becomes its own. In a way, it's kind of like a bit of an insular community, but I really emphasize in class that they have a huge audience. If you scroll up to the top of this page and click on the words Pre-Cal 40S, it'll take you to the latest post. And then we can click on any one of these. Let's click on Pre-Cal 20S.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll scroll down just a little bit on the right-hand side. We're looking for where it says email Mr. Kirapatwa and then our visitor map.
Mm-hmm.
And click on the visitor map. And I installed that just before the break, just before the holiday. And it shows the most recent 20 visitors to the site within some time frame. Well, look where people are coming to visit my Pre-Cal 20S class from. I mean, I just got you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's someone, looks like Scotland. And if we click on it, it'll say what it is. Yeah, Motherwell, Scotland. Someone visited our blog. Someone from Alaska. Looks like Miami. Boca Raton, Florida. It's either Seattle or Vancouver, I think, there. Yeah, it's Vancouver. So I've got people visiting the blog from all over the world. And so what I explain to the kids is that your audience is international now. It's global. And people are reading what you write across the world. And some of them are coming back again and again. So when you write something on the blog, keep in mind that it's not just for you. And you really want to impress these people from all over the world. Some of them are other students, and some of them are teachers, and some of them are just visitors to the blog. So what image do you want to portray? Well, that was powerful. That was really powerful. And for a while there, my classes were the only ones doing this. It's exploded now. There's a huge number of classes that are doing this now. But for a little while, short time, my classes were not the only ones, but in a very small group of classes that were doing this. So the purpose of my having the visitor map is to underscore their audience. And when kids have an authentic audience, a global audience, for the work that they do, that comment that the student made in Conrad's class about it felt like no one was listening, well, this is why. Because when they write, everybody's listening.
That must be very powerful, because you must never have to worry that students are going to say something inappropriate or, you know, misrepresent themselves or be stupid.
Well, we've spent an awful lot of time talking about that explicitly. You're Here, Let's Begin is the first post they get, where I just try to get them using the internet and do some research on study skills. The next post is the blogging on blogging post, customized for this group of kids. And then after that, there was a scribe. And then above that is the third post that I put on the blog, which is called Students Made This. Two teachers in the United States, Bud the teacher, his name's Bud Hunt, and Stephen, I think it's Stephen Lazar. Not sure about his last name, but Steve, they worked with their students to develop a set of guidelines for what would be appropriate online behavior. And after looking through all that stuff, I chose these four points to emphasize with my students. So certainly before ever a chat box appeared, we had discussed this. This goes on the blog, and we talk about it in class. And the kids are encouraged to participate here by leaving comments. And if you see, there's three comments that were left on this post. Mm-hmm. If you click on the comments, and they pop up, you'll see that basically the students kind of agree with the four items that I've highlighted. And the third comment there is a good one for me, where Samus says, "Hello, wow, that's scary. One of your students from Sweden." So I had said that I found blog posts written by my students all over the internet. So she says, "Now I will think twice when someone on the internet asks where I live or what my phone number is. Very, very good advice." So this is a grade 10 student. So she's already been online. She's already been in the chat rooms. Maybe she has a blog. I don't know. But she's never thought about this.
Yeah.
So anyways, after this, one of the kids did post something inappropriate. And he and I ended up having as soon as I saw the post, I didn't delete it. At first, I left it online. What he had done was, he was doing a scribe post about what had happened in class. And he tried, for him, I don't think he's an English as a second language student, but the family doesn't speak English as a first language. So he's come from a mixed background. And he was trying to write something that was sarcastic. He was trying to write satire, and he did it unsuccessfully. And what ended up coming across was something very, very negative in the way that he characterized me. So when I saw it, I kind of said, And my first impulse was to delete it. I said, "Well, wait, let me think about that for a minute." And I left it online. And then the next morning when I went into school, I had been thinking about it all night, and I said, "Well, I'm just going to take it offline." So I didn't delete it, I just turned it into a draft so that it doesn't appear on the blog. And he and I talked about it in class. And I showed him the stats. I said there had been 70 people that visited that blog and saw what you wrote since you posted it. And the people came from all over the world. And you said some nasty things about me that, you know, if you have a problem with me, talk to me about it. Let's sort it out. But some of the stuff you said is just not true. And I have a reputation not only in this school or this community or this city, I have a reputation in this province, in this country, and across the world. Mm-hmm. And these are the things you had to say about me. Now, I'm not really worried about my reputation. I mean, I think that people will look at the body of my work and judge me based on that, not what one student says. But I wanted him to understand just what he was doing. So we've spent some time talking, and at first he didn't get it. And then finally, when he saw the stats and he saw how many people had seen what he had written, and he said, well, most of those people are kids in our class. So I said, okay, well, let's find out. And the next day in class, I said, how many people saw that post that's been taken offline? How many people saw that? Three kids raised their hand. So I said, wow. 70 visitors, 67 of them were not from our class. I said, do you understand what you've done? And finally he got it. And so he had to write, he had to rewrite it, and he had to apologize. And in the end, I decided that I wouldn't publish his apology. I just took it offline and just went on. In hindsight, I probably should have had him publish the apology. It probably would have been a good lesson for him. At that time, I decided that I didn't want to embarrass him.
Yeah.
My VP caught up with him and pulled him aside and said, you know, Mr. K didn't publish what you wrote. Didn't publish your apology. He says, yeah. She said, do you know why he did that? And he said, no. He said, because he didn't want to embarrass you after what you had written about him. And the kid kind of really, he got it. So he learned a lesson, never had a problem since. And the kids have really picked up on the idea that, you know, the internet is a very safe place if you use it responsibly. And it's an incredibly unsafe place if you use it irresponsibly. So, I discuss it explicitly in class and on the blog, and I encourage the kids to participate in that discussion.
Sounds great. How long does it take you to teach the kids to blog, or do you even bother spending class time on that?
I spend zero class time on that.
Okay.
I do spend some time talking about the blog. One of my students, I'm going to take you to a different website. We're going to keep the blogspot.com, but where it says PC30S, delete that and type rip mix learn. That's going to take you to the workshop website.
Okay.
And let's scroll down. The second one is called blogs, aka weblogs. And then there's the boxes there, explore classroom blog, explore teacher blogs.
Mm-hmm.
And then your turn to jump in. Point number four, if you run into trouble or need help, read Bloggers R Us. It was written by a student in one of my classes. Let's click on that link. One of my kids, because some students were having trouble figuring out Blogger, so he decided that he was going to write a how-to, which he called Bloggers R Us, and he posted it on the blog. He did not do this for marks. He saw that there was a need in the community, and he responded to it. The night after he did this, one of the kids in my AP calculus class, and he's a grade 11 student, and my own grade 12 students in another class, they don't know each other at all, was having the same kind of problem. So she wrote something in the chat box of her blog saying, I don't know, can someone help me? So I popped in and I said, yeah, read this, and I just pasted the link to this post. Then she read that and she had no problem. So now the kids are teaching the kids unseen. My friend Bud Hunt has picked up this post in Colorado, and he shared it with teachers in his milieu. And then just the other day, someone somewhere else picked up this post as well and is using it to teach people how to use Blogger. And it's something that I really wanted to emphasize with the students. Like one of my overriding goals is that it's education doesn't just flow from teacher to student. That's not how learning takes place. It's not like pouring liquid from one cup into another. It doesn't flow in one direction. Real learning happens when people make connections. So there may be an exposure, perhaps, from teacher to student, but all that is an exposure. For the student to learn, they need to construct that knowledge for themselves. And the way they do that is by activating as many senses and as many different ways of working with that material as possible. So I was reading some research that in order for something to go into long-term memory, you need to be exposed to it 6 times. Well, just listening to me is 1 time. Then a kid writes a scribe post, that's a 2nd time. Then it's up to a kid, maybe they have their own notes that they wrote in class, that might be a 3rd time. Somewhere or other, they've got to work out a way to get 3 other exposures for what happened in that class that day, because there's a new class coming tomorrow. And that happens through the conversations, through the connections that kids make one with the other. I don't think it's so important anymore that kids have a lot of information stored in their heads. That's not important. What's important is that they know how to use the information, and they know how to find the information they need when they need it. And,
absolutely.
And this technology really facilitates all of that.
All right, fantastic. Kind of moving, switching tracks here.
Sure.
Do you think that there are other ways other than blogging to accomplish the same results with your students?
Haven't found them.
Okay.
There's just the combination of a public and private face, the ease with which people can communicate, the connections that we can establish one with the other, and you know, the grade nines visit my grade 10, 11, and 12 blogs. Some adults have trouble accommodating this technology. It becomes a little overwhelming. It's too much. But these kids are born in a world that never saw a record. They can't ever remember music being written on anything except a CD. The internet has been in their lives since the day they were born. They can't remember a world without the internet. They live in a totally connected, media-rich, media-intense world. And then they go into a classroom, which is really based on a model from the Industrial Revolution, where they sit in rows and columns, and they have to do, everyone does the same thing at the same time, usually, and they're supposed to absorb this knowledge. They're not allowed to have their cell phones on, their instant messengers. They're not allowed to have access to any of this external media. They're supposed to use the pencil and paper, the Industrial Revolution technology, and just focus on the one-way direction from teacher to student. I don't think that's true in every class. And I know that the lion's share of teachers out there mix up the activities that the kids do in the course of any one class period. Because we've learned that the kids need that. They learn better when they have that. Well, the more activities we can mix up for them and the more different opportunities that we can create for them to connect, not just with us, but with each other, then the more they're going to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Learning, I've been doing a lot of reading about this lately. My current curriculum, my syllabus for what I'm learning right now, I just posted back on A Difference, if you want to see it, The Evolution of Teaching and Learning. A lot of teachers, when they get exposed to this, they get very excited and they say, well, oh, if I do a blog, then I don't have to work as hard anymore. And I'm concerned about that because I don't think that's true. A blog will definitely lighten the load. Like, there's less paper involved in many assignments because they happen online. And it certainly lightens the load in some ways. Like, if a kid misses class, or they're away, or they're sick, or whatever it is, well, go read the blog, because all the lessons have been recreated there by your classmates. So in some ways, it's lightened my load. But what's happened is not that I'm working less, or that I'm not working as hard, I'm working differently. You know, my energies are directed in different directions now. Anyway, so this list of links is currently, I think, some of the best work that's out there right now. And in particular, George Siemens and Jay Cross and Stephen Downs write some really powerful stuff. And if you read what they're writing, they talk, like, you've heard of constructivism, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking now about a new idea in education called connectivism. That learning is really in the network of connections that you have. You know, each person has to build a personal, private knowledge network. And they make connections and links to various nodes on the network where information is stored so that they can retrieve it and use it as needed. What's important for students to learn is not to record the facts. What's important for students to learn is to learn how to manipulate the information, how to verify the accuracy of information. and use the information that they're exposed to. They also have to know how to access it when needed, that it should mm-hmm. be stored somewhere on their personal learning network. I don't know if I answered your question. I think I may have gone off topic a bit.
I just have one more question about that. Is that did you ever have a web page before the blog?
No.
Okay. Going through a couple of these questions, I think you've hit a couple of my questions already. But
okay.
Who do you find the interactions on the blog occur between? Are most of is it student to student contact? Mm-hmm. You know, a contact between you and the students or. Others, or
all of that. It's all of that. And I particularly enjoy when people from outside the classroom pop in, and they do. Our vice principal actually started interacting with the grade nines on their blog.
That's awesome.
Yeah. People, it doesn't happen often, but we have received comments from people in different places in the world, and that's really energizing for the kids. What more often happens is that they get talked about in different, like there have been articles published about my classes. They've been talked about in various newsletters. And when I learn about those things being published on the internet, I post it to the blog and say, take a look, you guys are having an impact. And that's part of kind of exposing them to the fact that they're now playing in a it's a global learning environment. It doesn't just happen in these closed silos that we call classrooms. My classroom walls are made of glass, and the world comes in on a daily basis.
It really seems like it.
Yeah.
I see that you said that your Pre-Cal 40S blog is dormant.
Mm-hmm.
Just encourage the kids to be part of the blog during your class.
Well, the Pre-Cal 40S class is dormant because that course has ended.
Okay.
It ended in June. I'm going to have another Pre-Cal 40S class starting up in February. And actually, I just got visited. I've been visited by a couple of students that were in that original Pre-Cal 40S class. And I've asked them if they'd be willing to play the role of mentor to students in the new classes. And I think I'm going to have some, it's going to be an interesting experiment. I'm going to have some kids who are currently in university mentoring students that are currently in high school. And I'll have them participate on the blog. And I don't know where this is going just yet, but mostly I think they're going to live in the comments. Well, they'll comment on the work that the students do and try to help them out. It's good for the kids. The kids, you know, I mean, I've told the kids that if they're more, the more involved they are, the more I see them really take to this with my classes, then I can write them letters of reference talking about their volunteerism, which is important for them. And I think they'll get something out of it. And my students will get something out of it. So it's win-win-win.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. It was one of the things I was kind of hoping to start in the first semester this year. It didn't take off, but it looks like it might happen in the second. So I had someone visit me today, totally unexpected, and he seems really keen on the idea of being a mentor. And he's talking about mentoring two or three of my classes. So I'm very excited about it. We'll see how it works out.
It'll be interesting.
Well, you have to follow a difference. I'll talk about it here.
Do you ever assess students' posts saying, like, this scribe gets an A or a B, or do you ever grade what they write?
Yeah, I've thought about that. Right now, I don't get into too much assessment on the blog. The assessment on the blog is limited to they're required to write a scribe post when it's their turn. So that's once every 20 odd. It depends on how many kids there are in the class.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to do their one reflective post per unit. That's one mark on their test. Those are the only ways that they get marks on the blog.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've also put in a system where they can get bonus marks on tests. So the original intent was not that the scribe post should be a textbook. that wasn't the original intent, but it did kind of grow into that. Let's click on Precal 30S. And then we'll scroll down a little bit to the links list, and you'll see the scribe list, and then underneath that, the editor's initiative. Oh, and here's something interesting. Right underneath the editor's initiative, you see Graham's massive notes post. Click on it. We'll take a look at that. Graham is a student in the class, and he took all the notes that I put on the board and copied them into his notebook. Part of this is part of the way I run my class. They keep a math dictionary. But Graham went one step farther. He then took his handwritten notes and he put them into a Word document about color and pictures and and diagrams and arrows and all kinds of stuff. And he has uploaded all of his notes for the course. So this is the entire course to date that Graham has uploaded. And he does this instead of doing a reflective post. Graham has decided he wanted to do this. So we talked about it, and I said, you know what? That's some powerful work. You go ahead and do it. And when he did this, I said, I'm going to put a permanent link to your work. You just update this. You don't have to create a new post every time. Just update this one, and that'll be fine. So now he's created this learning object. Like, he's really written the textbook for the course. It's just, this is just the most incredible thing that kid. Anyways, now we'll click on the editor's initiative. So the editor's initiative was introduced a little more than halfway through the course. The idea was that they're writing a textbook, and the pre-test reflective post gets tired by the time we get about halfway through the course. They're pretty much writing the same thing over and over again. So I said, well, look, if we're writing a textbook, then there are some mistakes in the textbook, and there are some scribes that don't really write everything that they should have to really fully explain those ideas. So if you would prefer, instead of doing a blogging on blogging post, you can undertake the editor's initiative, be an editor for the textbook. Go find a scribe post that's got one or more errors, or that doesn't have information, is incomplete in some way. Come talk to me about it. Tell me what you want to change or how you think it should be edited. And if I agree with you, then you've got my go-ahead to go talk to the author of that post. And they can work out with the author. Either the author will make the changes themselves that the editor emails them, or the editor will be given access to edit the post themselves.
Cool.
So now the thing is, though, for the best kids, all that's going to happen is the best kids are going to go and get all the marks. Uh-huh. It's the weakest kids that I want doing this, that I want thinking about old work and reflecting on their work. So I said, well, look, you can do more than one edit, and for each edit beyond one, you get a bonus mark. I said, but the number of edits you're allowed to do depends upon your mark on the last test. So kids that got 90 or more, they're only allowed to do one edit. Kids that got between 80 and 89, and you can see the table if you scroll down, you'll see it in blue.
Yeah.
And so you see, like, the kids that did worst, they could get 10 edits, they get their mark for blogging on blogging plus 9 bonus marks. And I don't mind giving them more than 100% on a test, particularly if it's a weak student. Now, think about that. Like, some people say, well, you know, you're inflating the marks. I don't think so. Because if a kid goes and finds 10 errors in all the previous work that's been done and goes and learns enough in order to fix it and make it better, or adds information because something wasn't, you know, satisfactorily explained, that's a hell of a lot of learning. Mm-hmm. And that's all I give a damn about. I don't really care about their marks. I just care that they learn. Kids care about their marks. That's why they can do this.
What have parents' reactions been to your blog?
Universally, parents, students, teachers, administrators, the response has been overwhelmingly positive. I haven't had a lot of parents come talk to me about it, but every parent that has spoken to me about it is just floored. One parent said, thank you for doing this for my son. I'd like to get parents more involved. And that's something that I'm working on for next semester. I'm going to be creating a parents' information post that I'm trying to find out by doing a little informal survey amongst parents that I talk to, what kind of information would they like to have access to? And so I'm going to try to put that together for next semester.
Do you know of any parents that read your blog? I mean, yeah. I feel like my mom would be reading it every day, but...
Yeah, I do. I know that some parents do pop in and read it. I don't know how many parents do. A lot of my students come from homes where the first language isn't English, so it's harder for them. But in those homes where the first language is English, I know that the parents are popping in and seeing what's going on. But I need to create more draws here for the parents. I would like parents to spend more time here. I knew this was a success with the kids when, on a Saturday night at midnight, kids are talking in the chat box and they're talking about math. It may not have been the way I might have chosen to spend my Saturday night when I was a teenager, but if that's what they're doing, that's just great.
Absolutely.
Oh, you asked one last thing about parents. On Sundays, I always post a game to the blog, some interactive
game. I've played the game before.
Okay. So, see, that's me being, well, I don't know if I'm being subtle or not, but I try to post games that are problem solving, that makes the kids think, they're challenges. And the kids are having fun and they're playing these games and they're solving problems and they're learning to think, and that's what it's all about. But they think it's just a game. Anyways, some teachers here in Winnipeg, after the workshop I did, I also did some work with Cheryl Nussbaum Beach, who's a teacher educator in Virginia, and she's doing some work in Alabama. She did a workshop in Alabama. I Skyped into the workshop and spoke to about 180 teachers there. So some of them have picked up on this, and they started doing blogs. One of them picked up on one of the Sunday games, Cuba Ban, and I was just reading on her blog, one of the kids left a comment on the post where she had the link to the game Cuba Ban, that he and his mom had sat down and worked through all 30 levels of the game. So when I read that, I said, well, that's fantastic, right? Because I could just I had this great picture in my head of this boy and his mom sitting together saying, how does this work? Oh, yeah. And like, they're playing a game, spending time together, and they don't realize that they're learning. And that's what it's all about. And I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple more questions for you.
Sure.
How do you feel your blog helps you improve your lessons? Like you as a teacher.
Well, it certainly has improved my teaching. This is all about the scribe post. Okay, so this is where I went in great detail about what the benefits of having a scribe post are all about.
Mm-hmm.
Having the scribe post has allowed me to, like, really deep insight into one kid's head each and every day. And usually when you have a struggling student, you ask them, well, do you understand what's going on? And their first response is, no, I don't understand anything. But when the kid has to scribe what happened in class that day, well, they're forced to wrestle with the material and try to present as best they can what they do understand. So I had a student who wrote a scribe post, and that's where you see that link, scribe. She wrote a scribe post, and she had felt beforehand that she didn't understand a thing about what had happened in class that day. But then she writes this scribe where there are a couple of things that she doesn't get. But I'd say about 90% of the material she understood, and understood it well. If I had just done the oral communication with her, she would have said, I'm sorry, I don't get any of it.
Mm-hmm.
But because she did it as a scribe, two things happened. One, it forced her to really think about what she learned, so she's doing learning because she has to do that reflection. And second, I can very honestly go to her and say, no, actually, you know a lot more than you thought you did. There's only these one or two things that are you misunderstood. And almost like a surgeon, I can say, here, this is what you didn't get. Here's how to fix it. Like, I'm not usually privy to that level of detail about where a student's at. But because they have to write it, I'm getting that insight. The kids that were chatting that night kind of pushed me, and then I installed the chat box. I was a little anxious about the chat box. I remember when I first posted it, I wrote about it here at A Difference. And someone wrote back with a comment saying, you know, do you have to spend a lot of time moderating what the kids are writing there? Because they can just write and they can be anonymous. And the kids, by the time the chat box was installed, we had already spent a lot of time talking about ethical behavior on the internet or the ethics of blogging. So I said, no, it doesn't really come up. There was just one time that I actually had to edit something in a chat box. And that was when a student who was struggling with the homework and went into the chat box and said, is there anybody here? I need help. I need it now. Please, somebody. And no one was online at the time. So she said, please call me. I really need help with this homework. And she left her telephone number. So I saw that and I deleted it and sent her an email telling her that I had deleted where she had left her phone number, and I told her why. And I caught up with her in class the next day. And we talked about it face to face, and then we talked about it as a class. You know, I asked her permission. I said, can I discuss that with the class? She said, sure. So everybody learned something from that. And I told the story in all of my classes. So I've never since had to moderate the comments. We have gotten a little bit of spam. But then I took out, I changed one of the settings on the chat boxes, and now we don't get any more spam.
Yeah, I know. I did see that on your blog at one point.
Yeah.
A lot of the in the comments, I think.
Yeah, they had, what would happen is the spammers would come and say, oh, you've got a great site here. And then there was an ability to create their name as a link as well. And they would link to sometimes to porn, sometimes to Viagra, sometimes to real estate, whatever. So I just took out the possibility to create that link. And now I haven't gotten any spam since.
Do you feel that the blog helps your students improve their writing skills? Or is it something that you're interested in improving? Or?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm a teacher first,
yeah.
Right? So I expect when they write that they should write well. I tell them that built into Blogger, there's a spell checker. I say, anytime you write a post, you should use that spell checker before you click the publish button. But I don't dock them marks or anything. In their written work, if a word is misspelled, I'll write SP question mark, but I won't dock them marks for it. But yeah, I think it has helped them. Because, I mean, part of it is they're writing for an authentic audience. And they don't want to look dumb. They want to impress the people they're writing for. So I think they do take a little more time than they otherwise would.
I actually think I'm down to my last question.
Oh, wow. Great.
So if I were to take a look at a specific month or a specific period in time of any one of your blogs, do you think there's one that showcases all the different things that you do better than others? Or would it not matter?
I don't think I would pick an individual month. What I would say is if you look at PreCal40S, my first blog, and you read through it, you'll see that the dominant voice is mine. And most of the posts are written by me. While students do participate, it's mostly in the comments. They do write their pre-test reflective posts, but they didn't really totally buy into it. If you read any of my current blogs, you'll see that the students have really taken ownership of the space. And if you start reading through the posts there, you will not see my voice as a dominant voice. As a matter of fact, you'll see that the student voices predominate. And and that perspective, I think, is the one that's important, most important to me anyways. Yeah. What was I going to say? Sorry, I got a cat crawling on my shoulder.
No, it's okay.
it's more about the students. And even in the comments, most of the comments are written by students to students. If anything now, I want them to take, you know, for the next group, I want them to take better care about what they write. I want them again to like watch that spelling and grammar. And I want them to take better care about their work. And I want students to go back and edit their own work. And I've started doing that. When I first started the Scribe post, when they made mistakes, I generally didn't say too much about it because I didn't want to scare them off and make kids feel self-conscious. But now, as a class, we're talking about how it's a textbook, and a textbook should be well-written. So when there's a mistake, I leave a comment. You know what, I'll take you over to Pre-Cal 20S and show you what I mean. If we look down to Monday, January 9th, Scribe for Today. Mm-hmm. As you look at that post, the stuff that's in green, the first piece that's in green, says Table of Values. Then underneath that says, write an equation for the relation. She didn't do a spell check. So its interest is supposed to be a function of the amount borrowed. And the way she's got that written, 1 over 20a, it looks like that a belongs in the denominator, mm-hmm. but it really should be in the numerator. So if we scroll down, and you see there's two comments there. So click on the comments. And this is how I comment to the students when they make mistakes. She did a really great scribe post. It was really fantastic. But there was an error. So I said, and I think, I don't think it was a real error, that one. I think that's just, she just didn't realize. She didn't know how to configure it. So I said, it could be misinterpreted like this, which is not what you meant. Now, even if she did mean that, I'm going to say that's not what you meant. Now, brackets can help. You can write it like this, or you can write it like this. Both of those are right, but the last one there is the one that it should be written. But instead of saying that, I just say, I like this one best. Now, I know she's forever going to write it that way. Because we don't need to tell kids, you know, you don't need to beat them over the head with mistakes that they've made. Tell them what you like best. And that's what they'll do.